You're back with Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. If you've ever wondered what those mysterious terms are on food labels, like sodium chloride or modified food starch, you're not alone. Boulder writer Melanie Warner was so curious that she went on an odyssey through the world of processed foods. And what she found might even surprise health food nuts who think they're eating well. It's all in Warner's new book, Pandora's Lunchbox. She's been a reporter for 2 decades, including a stint at the New York Times covering the food industry. Melanie Warner spoke with CPR's Andrea Dukakis.
Melanie, thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So I brought in 2 packages from the meal I made last night. I made pork chops, rice, and broccoli. And one of the packages is a package of rice pilaf, and the other is a marinade for the pork chops. And I looked at the back, the ingredients, and there were some things in there that I didn't recognize.
Yeah, well, thanks for bringing it in. It sounds like it was a delicious dinner. The vast number of products that exist in the supermarket that we have to choose from, they occur along a processing continuum. So you have highly processed products on one end, and then you have more of the minimally processed products. These are things like frozen vegetables and canned peas. And I think just from looking at the boxes here that your selections would probably fall somewhere in the middle.
Even though I think that they're very healthy and the packages look very healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's some, I like to think of highly processed food, which is really what we're talking about when we say processed food. I like to think of that as something that you could not make at home in your home kitchen using the same ingredients listed on the package. So this, for instance, your rice or box of rice has a few ingredients in there that you probably don't have at home, such as autolyzed yeast extract. So that falls somewhere in the middle, and I'm sure it was delicious, but you might have been a little bit better off health-wise by just making some brown rice and cooking it simply in a pot at home instead of getting it from the box.
An autolyzed yeast extract. What is that, just in a nutshell?
That's one of the many flavorings that the food industry uses to help food taste good, and it creates a savory flavoring. They take yeast, basically, and they shock it with salt, so it destroys the cell wall, and the yeast kills itself, autolyzed. And it's a very useful and terrific flavoring in the food industry. It's used all the time.
So I probably would have had a little more sodium, too, maybe, than I would have had if I just made my own rice.
Exactly. If you'd made your own rice, it wouldn't have had 780 milligrams of sodium per serving. So you would have maybe added a little bit of salt on your own at home, but you wouldn't get anywhere near 780 milligrams unless you were a real saltaholic.
And then what about the marinade? That had a couple ingredients I wasn't familiar with or I wouldn't have had in my kitchen.
Yeah, the maltodextrin has a few, like soy powder. You probably don't have that at home. And maltodextrin, which is kind of a starch material that helps gel everything together. But this is something, it's basically soy sauce and it has some garlic puree and onion powder, kind of a lot of things that you would have at home. And this is kind of a product that it's kind of a shortcut for people who have busy lives. And maybe with your pork chops, you don't want to have to make a marinade. You're already, you know, grilling up pork chops, which is a somewhat of a, you know, a homemade meal. So it's okay to use the sesame teriyaki. That gets a thumbs up.
Not great, but not a terrible
not
combination.
Atrocious. Not the worst dinner, no.
What about the stuff that's really bad, the packaged food that we shouldn't be eating?
Yeah, there's quite a lot in the grocery store if you go and look at it. Some of the worst processed food has really high levels of sodium and salt and fat in it. Those are 3 ingredients that in excess are, we know, scientists have agreed unilaterally, these are bad for us. And then you have a lot of products that have an overabundance of food additives in them. And there are certain things that, you know, I would avoid eating. You know, things that you don't recognize on the label in terms of food additives.
What kind of things are those?
Well, there's one that's called azodiocarbidamide, which is found in a lot of breads and bread products. And this is something that is actually used more commonly in the production of foamed plastics, things like yoga mats. Could be on the soles of your shoes. So it's actually a chemical that's only barely edible, really. And I encountered a few years ago, there was some news reports of a chemical spill. A tanker truck that was carrying azodiocarbidamide overturned outside of Chicago. And fire officials issued their highest hazmat alert and had to evacuate people up to a half mile downwind. So you look at something like that and you have to ask yourself, is this something that we really want to be putting having in our toast or having in our turkey sandwich or the bread in our turkey sandwich.
So what exactly does that do? Why is it in bread?
It's in there as an oxidizer, they call it, and it helps to evenly distribute the air. You know, when bread is made, there's carbon dioxide to create those little holes you see in bread, and it just helps create what food scientists call a fine crumb structure. So it helps the bread look good. It helps it just helps in the manufacturing of it. And it's a concerning ingredient because there have been tests done that show when zodiacarbidamide is heated, such as in bread baking, it breaks down into a known carcinogen called semicarbazide. And the view of the FDA is that it's at low enough levels that it's not a problem. So they haven't really done anything about this. They've asked bread makers to not stop using it or find an alternative, but just simply use a little bit less of it.
So we want to be looking at some of these food labels. And as you say, if it's not something that you have in your kitchen or you could make at home, it's probably not a great thing to buy.
Yeah, exactly. And some of these additives are fairly benign. I mean, zodiacarbidamide is just one example of one of the ones that has had some safety studies associated with it that are concerning. Some of the others are totally benign and fine, but the issue is that they don't actually contribute any nutrition to the product. So they're not adding anything when you're eating these things. They don't have any nutrients. They don't have fiber. So you're better off looking for things that have naturally occurring nutrition in them.
You spend a lot of time on Kraft singles in your book, and you talk about the man who sort of invented them. And you do an experiment in your refrigerator with some cheese singles that we use for grilled cheese and other foods we eat.
I did. I bought these, I think it was about 4 years ago, as part of just kind of a food experiment that I did, collecting a number of different processed food items to see what would happen after their expiration date. And so they sat in my fridge for about 2 years, and then I took them out, and they looked perfectly fine. They had shrunken a little bit. They were still bright, bright orange. They maintained their color very nicely. And that was actually when processed cheese was invented around 1915. That was the whole idea, that it was going to keep forever. And in the patent, James L. Kraft, who's the founder of the Kraft Company, he actually wrote that they were permanently keeping. So people didn't realize at the time that there are actually higher levels of sodium in processed cheese than there are in regular cheese. And part of that is because of the salt that's added, but also because of sodium-based additives. There are two of them in processed cheese. And that wasn't a concern at the time. We can look at that now and think that's an issue, but there really wasn't that awareness. And if anything, people in the 20s, 30s, 40s were entranced by the idea of technology being applied to food. This was a good thing, and companies actually market it as a good thing.
If you've just joined us, we're speaking with Melanie Warner, who went on an investigative journey through the world of processed foods and uncovered some of the mysterious ingredients many of us eat every day. It's all in her new book called Pandora's Lunchbox. Melanie, you trace the history of a very well-known food family. This is the Kellogg family. And you spend a lot of time talking about cereal, how it's billed as wholesome and healthy. But you use the terms extruded and gun-puffed to talk about how cereal's made. They're terms that aren't really in our lexicon when it comes to thinking about cereal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, cereal goes through some interesting processing to be made. And one of the things that the questions I asked myself when I was looking at doing this book was, why is it nearly impossible to find a box of cereal in the cereal aisle without a whole slew of added vitamins? And the answer is because a lot of cereals just don't have a lot of naturally occurring nutrition. A lot of it either doesn't start with a lot from the starting ingredients, or they go through so much processing that a lot of the nutrients, especially vitamins, are destroyed. And extruders are these machines where they're highly efficient machines, and you could put all the ingredients to make a cereal or a bar, they're often used for bars, or perhaps a chicken McNugget in one end, and there are these giant screws, heavy screws inside, and churns it up, essentially melds all the ingredients together molecularly. I mean, this is way more than a blender at home. Sometimes it's referred to by food scientists as plasticizing food. And so you put it into one end, it comes out from the other side in fully formed pieces, whether it's an alphabet cereal, honeycomb cereal, or a chicken nugget. And this all happens in the span of a minute.
And gun-puffed?
Gun-puffed is a machine, a gun-puffing machine. It's used really only for cereal, certain cereals. And you take grain and you essentially, as the name implies, you explode it, increasing the volume of it. So puffed rice, puffed wheat, Cheerios are gun-puffed. And gun-puffing can be fairly damaging to fiber that's in food. And extruders, in particular, can also destroy fiber. And they're also very damaging to vitamins. So this is just one of the trade-offs that we're making. You know, we're getting cereal that's very efficiently produced. Manufacturers are making it very cheaply, but some of the nutrition is compromised.
Although it's not very cheap at the grocery store.
It's not very cheap at the grocery store. Cereal has good margins on it.
So you talked about how you process the cereal, take out all the vitamins or a lot of the vitamins, and then for years, manufacturers have been adding vitamins back into the cereal. Does that compensate for what's been taken out?
Yeah, you see all kinds of claims on packages, high in vitamin D, antioxidants, which simply means they've added some vitamin E or vitamin C. And scientists are starting to think that supplements and vitamins that are added, synthetic vitamins essentially, are not the same thing as vitamins you get in food. And the first reason for that is that when you consume it in a vitamin that Mother Nature made in a food, you're getting all sorts of other good things with it. Other vitamins, minerals, fiber, antioxidants. And the idea that the scientists are coming around to is that food is more than the sum of the parts. It's not just you take it apart and then try and put it all back together and it's all going to work.
And you actually talk about vitamins. I think of a vitamin C supplement maybe being derived from an orange or vitamin A from a carrot, but that's not exactly how it works.
Yeah, well, I mean, vitamin A is made through acetylene gas, which comes from or starts with acetylene gas, and it comes from the petroleum refining process. And I'd have to be a chemist to take you through all the steps that it goes through to get to vitamin A. And vitamin C actually comes from a corn ingredient called sorbitol. It's a processed corn ingredient. And then it goes through various bacterial and chemical processes to get to vitamin C. And none of this, you know, means, I don't mean to suggest by any of this that these ingredients are inherently dangerous because they might start with scary sounding substances. It's just that it's not always what people think they are.
So this is a nation that takes a lot of vitamin supplements. Should folks not be taking them? You know, are they still better than staying away from them?
I think if you go to your doctor and your doctor tells you you're deficient in a certain vitamin, or number of vitamins, I think it's certainly a good idea to take vitamin supplements, absolutely. Or you're in some high-risk group. But I think on an ongoing basis, it's vastly better to get vitamins from food and to look at your diet and think, well, what am I not getting from my diet?
Let's talk about Subway. It's one of those fast food stores that I've always considered pretty benign compared to places like McDonald's. And you mention in the book my son's favorite sandwich, which is the sweet onion teriyaki sandwich. It's really not as good as it sounds health-wise.
Yeah, Subway has gotten a very good reputation as being fresh and as being the healthy alternative to fast food. And part of this is because they've made a concerted effort to include less fat in their products, which is a good thing. If you compare it to the fried foods at some of the other fast foods, it is a better choice. However, after spending a lot of time looking at their products and looking at their ingredient list, I would take issue with the word fresh. It doesn't exactly ring true when you look at what their food is made of. So the sweet onion teriyaki sandwich is just one example of that. It kind of reads like a chemistry experiment. And I think a lot of this gets overlooked because it's a restaurant chain. And unlike foods at the grocery store where you could just pick them up and look at the ingredient list to see what's in it, restaurants, you have to go hunting around on their website and look for the product you're looking for. And it takes quite a lot of time. And a lot of people just simply don't do that.
Although, you know, you go into Subway and there's bread baking, it seems very fresh. It smells sort of fresh.
Right. They bake it in the stores and that helps with the taste of freshness. It absolutely does. And it's really a stroke of marketing genius. They started doing that in the 80s, long before Panera Bread. But that bread is made, the dough is made in centralized facilities. There's 10 of them around the country. And they put all kinds of dough conditioners and substances and preservatives in them, including the one I mentioned earlier, azodiocarbinamide, which is a barely edible chemical. into their bread to help make it cheaper and to make it super soft the way people like it. So it's not exactly the kind of fresh bread that you make at home or the fresh bread you get from a small bakery, to the extent that there are any more of those left.
Are the Subway vegetables fresh?
They're, as far as I know, they're fresh. Yes, I don't think there are any additives in those.
Okay.
So if you just went to Subway and you just got a sandwich with the vegetables on it, you'd probably be in better shape, although you'd still be having the bread with all the additives.
Melanie, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
Melanie Warner is the author of the new book, Pandora's Lunchbox. She lives in Boulder and spoke with CPR's Andrea Dukakis. I'm Ryan Warner, no relation to our guest, and that's Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio.